Tonight on BBC Two sees the beginning of the long-anticipated Stephen Fry documentary Out There, which is Stephen's travels of the world, talking to people in various corners of it about their experiences of being gay. Now, the series is produced and directed by an Abbeyside man, Abbeyside Dungarvan County Waterford man, Fergus O'Brien, who left these shores about nearly 30 years ago now to go off and pursue his dreams and has made a lot of documentaries. In Britain, television documentaries in recent years. And he joins us now in studio to tell us his experiences of making this documentary with Stephen. Fergus, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi Ian, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
What a project, and what a man to do it with. I mean, Stephen Fry, we all love him. He is not only a national but an international institution. 6 million Twitter followers. It doesn't get bigger than him.
It doesn't, and he's such a prolific face on television. I mean, he's just involved in so many things and has fingers in so many pies. He was absolutely the right candidate to approach to make this series,
yeah.
Because he's got the clout and he's got the intellectual rigor to challenge some of these homophobes in quite powerful positions around the world. The challenge for me was to try and work with Stephen in a different way to how I'd seen him used on TV before.
All right, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's very easy for people who have a kind of a celebrity status, if you like, to fall into the role of being a presenter. Mm-hmm. And I was very keen that we saw Stephen less as a presenter and more as a character within the film. So it was his journey and the experiences that he would come across across the two films would allow him to reflect on his own life and
right.
his own experiences as a gay man.
Right.
And I wanted to see how all these people that he was coming across on his journey, mm. you know, the impact that they had on him and what that made him think about his own life and
so
his own life
yeah,
experience.
He's actually part of the story as opposed to just commenting on it.
Very much.
When you pitched it that way to him, I presume that was one of the clinchers, was it?
Not really, to
no.
be honest with you. Stephen is very, well, it's no secret, he's an incredibly clever man.
Yes.
And there's not much he doesn't know something about. So he's most comfortable when he's delivering facts and giving you information.
Okay.
And there's no shortage of it.
Yes.
He's not so comfortable when you start delving into how he feels about things.
Wow.
So that was
okay.
actually a challenge for him and by extension a challenge for me
yeah.
to try and draw that side of him out.
Yeah.
And that's where we had our differences.
Your
at
creative
times.
Differences.
Our creative
yeah.
differences at times.
Stephen,
yeah.
you're not giving me enough of yourself in this. You're not letting me in.
What are you going to be asking me now, Fergus? How I feel. How do you feel, Stephen? But I have to say, when he saw the programmes, he apologised and said that my instinct was right and that it is probably what makes it, I think, a quite extraordinary kind of documentary.
Very good. Let's just talk a bit about the places you went and the people you met. Can we start off with Russia?
Mm.
Because Russia has recently gone bonkers when it comes to how they treat gay people and their attitude towards them. How was your experience there?
Well, Russia, we feature in the second programme in the series. It was a big... A lot of thought went into where we went and where we didn't go. But obviously Russia was increasingly became an obvious kind of candidate, an obvious place that we should go. We were very worried about... as we were everywhere we went, you know, it's not a nice place to be gay in.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very worried about the security, the safety of people that we talked to on camera.
Yes.
You know, it's easy for us to whiz in and get this incredible testimony from them. Mm-hmm. But then we're gone. And what happens then?
And of course, it's a global audience. So, I mean...
It is. Yeah. I mean, we were able to guarantee that... the programs wouldn't be sold to any Russian networks, not that any of them would probably buy it anyway.
Yes.
but, you know, in the age of the internet, you can never guarantee that these things aren't going to bleed onto the net. In fact, they inevitably will.
Yes.
So really, it was about sort of having very thorough chats with people about the risks. Mm. And I have to say that we owe everything, really, for the documentaries to the bravery of the people who just felt that it was important to speak out, and that people knew what exactly is going on in Russia.
Okay, what is life like for a gay man or a gay woman in Russia?
Well, we went to St. Petersburg, which is where a new law was came into being a couple of years ago, and it was written by the law was the author of the law is the deputy of St. Petersburg, a guy called Vitaly Milanov, who is a politician clearly, but also a Russian Orthodox priest in training. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see any conflict of interest there, obviously. And he brought in this law which makes it illegal to... it's called the anti-gay propaganda law. And so basically it makes it illegal to give advice, support, to say that it's okay to be gay. It's now illegal to say that perhaps St. Petersburg's most famous son, Tchaikovsky, who is famously gay and tortured by his sexuality, you can't say that anymore, because that might make people think that you can only be a fantastic musician if you're gay. I mean, just the mind boggles.
Yes.
The law was passed, and subsequently the law was rolled out all across Russia. And it is very complicated, and... it's a very sort of, it gets people into a very sort of treacly situation that you don't quite know what applies. Mm-hmm. So we filmed with some gay families, a lesbian couple who each have a child. And in theory, in principle, they are breaking the law, because just by living their lives and demonstrating their affection for each other in front of their children, is that propaganda?
They're exposing their lifestyle to their children.
Yes.
And that is illegal.
That is illegal.
Wow.
Yeah.
First, whence the bigotry? Why is it that people in Russia, and you know, obviously the same question applies to elsewhere in the world, what is the fear? Why do people have such a problem, do you think, from your experiences with gay people and their lifestyles?
Well, it's interesting that you chose the word fear, because I think that's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, phobia is fear. Mm. I think it's a sort of a fear of the unknown. Mm. I think it's, you know, historically there's always been a real value in having scapegoats. Mm-hmm. Whether it was the Jews or whether it was black people. Mm. Indeed, you could go as far as say women. And now it's gay people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's useful to have somebody sort of further down the pecking order than most other people.
Yeah.
And to be able to sort of vilify those people and make them out to be the enemy, particularly in countries where most people are not actually having a great time, and that's probably to do with a lot of what the governments are up to.
Here's an easy target.
Here's somebody who's worse than you, and there's this tripod of ideas, if you like, where they say gay people are promoting their lifestyle, encouraging people to become gay. They're recruiting is another word that we hear a lot of. The idea that you can sort of talk people into or out of it.
It's hilarious.
And most dangerous and perniciously, really, there is the idea that that they equate homosexuality with paedophilia, which is the most destructive thing, really, because it just breeds fear into people. But clearly, paedophilia is not a sexuality.
Yeah.
It's something else.
That's right.
At its base level, it's a crime.
Yeah.
And homosexuality is not.
But the fact that that association can be made is baffling, to say the very least. You're saying to me before we started the interview that there's five countries in the world where you can be put to death simply for being gay. And there's another one possibly coming down the line.
Mm-hmm.
That's Uganda.
There's another two, actually. Another one is one is the newest country in the world, South Sudan, which is contemplating it. And the other one, which is another country that we visited in Africa, Uganda, which since 2009 has been toying with And has had this bill actually floating around Parliament, which proposes a death penalty for gay people. Mm. And there are all sorts of other clauses within the bill, such as making it illegal not to report gay people that you know. So basically, you know, dobbing the people
there's,
in.
There's an opportunity for a witch hunt, if ever I heard one.
Yeah, and it's causing all sorts of problems. I mean, apart from the obvious ones of just the complete and utter disrespect for human rights. Mm. You know, Uganda has a massive problem with HIV again. Which, interestingly, a few years ago, they were getting a really good handle on their HIV problem.
Right.
But since then, the president's wife has become a born-again Christian, and suddenly condoms are not in favour. So HIV is going through the roof.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, now, gay people are afraid to come forward mm-hmm. and ask for treatment because they're worried they might end up in prison.
Exactly, a person.
So it's although the law hasn't passed, and, you know, whether it ever will, I don't know, because I think Uganda is very reliant on the West for aid, okay. financial aid. Mm.
So yeah, but in your own experience there, a person you were working with in advance of it, of the programme, did pay the ultimate price himself.
Yes, when we were doing our research in the beginning, before we went there, we were working with an activist from Uganda who was helping us to set up filming mm-hmm. And to sort of give us an in to some of the stories that would show yeah. what life is like there. And his name is David Cato. And a month before we were due to travel out, David was beaten to death, bludgeoned to death in his home. Yeah, that was...
Because he was an activist, because he was speaking out.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that was the only reason, that was his only crime.
That was his only crime.
My word.
So you can imagine, yeah. I mean, apart from the awful thing that was clearly for mm. David, but it also put the fear of God in us going out there.
Indeed it did, indeed it did. It was in Uganda as well that Stephen had a very bad turn and attempted to take his own life. I mean, we're aware that he's always had mental health issues and he suffers from a bipolar disorder. But you were the man who found him. That must have been an unbelievable shock for all concerned.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, Stephen, just to be clear, you know, made that announcement himself.
He did.
Lately. Mm-hmm. I hadn't said anything about it.
Yeah.
And it was a soul of discretion.
Naturally.
Look, I think, you know, as you said, Stephen's never made a secret that he suffers from bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And there's no rhyme or reason, you know, when the dark cloud of depression will come over. And
right.
it just did at that time. Now, perhaps the subject matter didn't help.
Well, indeed, it is very tough.
Yes, but Stephen would argue that it wasn't the cause.
Okay.
And really, yes, it was horrible, but mostly it was horrible for him. Mm. And so you just do what you got to do,
yeah,
and you get the man home and get him help.
How is he now?
He's great. Yeah, he's on really good medication. I saw him yesterday, and he's in fine form. He's heading off to Broadway to do 12th Night, and he's all guns blazing.
He's a busy man, I'll tell you. A lot of what we talked about so far and has been about the, you know, the difficulties that people face. But there are very liberal countries in the world when it comes to, very, very developed countries when it comes to people's attitudes to gay rights. I'm thinking countries like UK has come a long way, Brazil, the USA, I suppose, parts of it anyway, would be very liberal. You investigated that a bit as well.
We did, yes. We went to the USA to because, well, it's an obvious place to go, it was the sort of birthplace of the gay rights movement. Mm-hmm. And we were keen, particularly given that Stephen dabbles in acting, we were keen to see what Hollywood's take on gay people is. You know, would you be able to be cast as a romantic straight man, you know, if you weren't? And so that was something we were keen to explore, which we did. And we also explored this a practice called reparative therapy, which comes from the States,
yeah.
Which is a therapy which claims it can cure people of their homosexuality and make them straight. Now, that was very interesting, and we went and talked to one of the sort of main writers of that therapy and one of the main practitioners, who interestingly wasn't able to find anybody willing to speak who he had successfully cured.
Interesting.
Yeah, we could find lots of people who had been through the process who, you know, were campus Christmas, gayest Christmas.
Okay, yeah.
But he hadn't, there was nobody he could find.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting thing to do. Brazil was another place we went, which is an extraordinary country in that it, in the last 15 years, it's probably now has some of the best legislation in terms of equality, gay equality. But along with that, we went out there to film, the world's biggest gay pride parade, which had over 4 million people.
My word, 4 million.
4 million people. It's like seeing all of Ireland going down the high street.
Except much better dressed.
Yeah. So amazing things are happening there. But at the same time, it's kind of the more things advance, the more entrenched the anti-gay lobby becomes. And there's now quite a backlash there. So a gay person is murdered every 36 hours in Brazil.
That's an unbelievable statistic, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think, there's, in fairness, there's probably quite a fair bit of murder in Brazil.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. But still, that statistic is a bit out of control.
Certainly.
And we filmed a very harrowing story there with a mother who, on we met her on the first anniversary of her son's murder. He was 14 and he was abducted, tortured, and strangled by a group of neo-Nazis simply because he looked gay. As his mother said, they'd never even had the discussion.
Yeah.
But it was enough that he looked gay for them to take his life.
And
there was something which is probably the most poignant sentence, if I could pull one from the whole series, that Stephen said afterwards, which really sticks in my mind, which is, you know, it's very easy, Ian, when you read the stories in the paper and you read the statistics, but actually you meet people and, you know, they're the beating hearts behind the statistics. They're people, do you know what I mean? And nobody should have their lives taken from them just because of who they choose to love or go to bed with.
Exactly.
But it wasn't all doom and gloom. We went to India, which is extraordinary. And they've just overturned a law which the British brought in, criminalizing gay people. Before the British arrived, they had quite an open attitude. In fact, they had a very flourishing transgender community called Hijras, and it's male to female transgenders, and they were very revered in society and held very positions in government and royal households and so forth. But when the British came, they were just completely cast out, and many of them now are involved in sex work, really affected by HIV and so on. But since they've overturned this law, they seem to be kind of trying to shake off that British Victorian morality and are looking more to their kind of Hindu roots, and which is much more about acceptance and
tolerance,
understanding,
and
interestingly, negotiation.
Right.
It's about, you know, well, okay, so that's your life. Well, this is my life, and this is how you can fit your life in with my life.
Yeah.
And it's much more live and let live.
Yeah.
And whilst it's not perfect and they have a way to go, it was heartening to think that there is a different way of thinking about these things.
A final question to you, Fergus. You left Ireland, I don't know how old you were, probably in your late teens, early 20s, were you?
17.
17.
Yeah.
How does it compare now in terms of gay rights here in Ireland?
I think it was. It's
that's 30 years ago, nearly.
Yeah,
is it?
I think in Ireland, it's just a completely different ball game. I mean, I think, I suppose I should tread carefully here, but I think people are not so much in the grip of religion.
Absolutely.
And it has to be said, Ian, you know, in all the countries that I've been to, wherever there is trouble, their religion is stuck right in the middle of it.
Of course it is, yeah.
And that's very unfortunate. I think clearly that's changed beyond recognition in this country, and there seems to be a much greater acceptance. And indeed, for a while, I think more equality here than there was in the UK.
Oh, interesting.
You had an equal age of consent in Ireland before they did in Britain.
Right, okay. Yeah.
But, you know, change has come, and change has come very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the heartening thing for all of these places that are in the middle of horrific yeah. situations. You know, things can change.
Yeah.
It's only 1967 in the UK that it became legal.
And 1986
to be gay. here. You know, the World Health Organization classified homosexuality as a mental illness till 92.
Till 92?
92.
Oh, my word.
So that's extraordinary.
Yeah.
So things do change, and it's just about keeping the pressure on.
Mm.
And thinking how best to apply that pressure. Mm. It's a bit tricky with countries like Russia who seem to enjoy sort of standing up to the West.
And, yeah.
And I think probably the worst insult you could pay somebody in Russia is to call them a liberal. but, you know, we can only hope that things, as they have done here and in the UK, things will improve.
Great. Thanks very much for coming in.
You're welcome. It's been great to be here.
Been great talking to you. And the series is on BBC Two. It's called Stephen Fry Out There. Fergus O'Brien, thanks a million.
Thanks, Ian.